I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. If you're thinking about it, chances are we're talking about it on WHYY's Radio Times.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Moss-Cohen, welcome to Radio Times. One of Hollywood's best-kept secrets is the identity of the ratings board of the Motion Picture Association of America, the MPAA. The board has been in existence since the late 1960s, and it's made up of so-called everyday citizens. These are the people who decide whether a film is rated G, PG, PG-13, R, or NC-17. Their deliberations are secret. Many filmmakers have complained that the rulings by the ratings board just don't make any sense and that the criteria they use is completely arbitrary. My guest, Kirby Dick, decided to investigate the MPAA ratings board to find out about the identity of the members, the workings of the board, their connection to the film industry, and why graphic violence is often given the green light while certain sex scenes are not. To do this, he hired a detective agency and filmed what happened. Kirby Dick's documentary is called This Film Is Not Yet Rated, and it's produced by the Independent Film Channel. His last documentary, Twist of Faith, is about clergy sexual abuse, and it was nominated for an Academy Award. His other documentaries include Derrida, Chain Camera, and Sick, The Life and Death of Bob Flanagan, Super Masochist. And Kirby Dick joins us here in our Philadelphia studios. Nice to have you with us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Have you ever had to tangle with the MPAA board before this film?
I have not. All my other films have gone out unrated. But this, I've been an independent filmmaker for 20 years, and many of my fellow filmmakers I've seen their films get unfairly rated by the rating process.
In fact, you say in this film that independent filmmakers feel as if they get targeted more by the MPAA board than the more sort of major mainstream films.
Well, that's true. The MPAA is the trade organization and lobbying arm for the six major film studios. And they oversee this ratings process not only for their own films, but for all films released in the U.S., independent films and foreign films. So it's not surprising that they are able to sort of manipulate the system to their benefit.
This was started now in the late 1960s as a way, a ratings board as a way to rate films but not censor films. I mean, that was the initial idea.
That's correct.
And it was what started in the late 1960s,
right.
and Valenti.
Yeah, Jack Valenti set up the system in 1968, and the idea was to sort of replace the rating system that was in place at that time, which was the old production code. Mm-hmm. And the idea was that it would be, it helped parents. That was the argument. But in fact, what we've found is that it's really not very helpful to parents at all. It gives out very little information about what is in a film, which is what I think parents need to know.
And we're talking about language, we're talking about violence, and we're talking about sex. I mean, those are the three things that it really looks at.
And sometimes thematic content, sometimes political content, too. I mean, Fahrenheit 9/11 was given an R rating for some graphic footage of Iraqi civilian casualties. So there's a political angle to this as well sometimes.
Who does this board then work for? I mean, they work for the MPAA, but who do they have to answer to?
They rate the films themselves. Right. So, I mean, they're hired by the MPAA, but they rate the films themselves.
Now, you decided to penetrate this board and had to get beyond talk about wall of secrecy. Help us understand just how secret this organization is.
Well, they have a building in Los Angeles, which is sort of like an overblown mini mall. It's kind of funny in that way, but it's very, the security is very high. It's not a lobby that you can walk into and announce yourself. At the gate, you have to announce what your business is, and perhaps they'll let you in. So what we did is we hired a private investigator, and in her sort of beat-up old van outside that building, we filmed her working for over several months as she tracked down each one of these raiders. But it was tricky because we were out there with a camera crew, and we had to be very much undercover, but we had to get this information, otherwise our film wouldn't have been successful.
Well, and it certainly worked for the film, but why was it so important to find the identity of these members of the ratings board?
Well, again, there's the secrecy of the rating system is one of its characteristics. I mean, we're talking film ratings here, not national security, but for some reason person, Jack Valenti, has felt that secrecy is paramount. And one of the most things that they've kept most secret is the identity of the Raiders. For nearly 30 years, no news organizations, 60 Minutes or Nightline, has been able to get the names of these Raiders. So America doesn't know who's rating these films. And, you know, we live in a democracy, and I think that this is something that we should know. So, what I did is hire this private investigator to find these people, because I felt it was important that the public know.
Well, and we should say that she's a pretty good private investigator and that she found out a lot of information. Everything she did was legal, but we're talking about secret cameras and going through people's trash and all the sort of, I guess, the typical tools of the trade for a PI.
Yes, absolutely. Well, in Los Angeles, it is legal to go through someone's trash once they put it on the street. And what we were looking for the film ratings forms to determine the process that they use to rate films, because no one had ever seen those forms before. And we, after much work, came across one of those.
And what did you find?
Well, we found that they counted the number of profanities, they counted the number of thrusts. What's surprising about this system, though, is how unprofessional it is. It probably is one of the most unprofessional boards operating in this country today. There are no professionally developed standards. There are no written standards. The raters receive no training. They're just hired and put into the job the next day. There are no experts affiliated with the ratings process. There are no media experts on the boards or no child psychologists. So it's a deliberately unprofessionalized system, because that way the MPAA and Jack Valenti are able to keep control over it.
And isn't their explanation is that they represent, you know, sort of every person or every adult or every parent in America? They're these, you know, average citizens. So their sort of unschooled response to a film would reflect how parents would feel.
Right. The only qualifications of these raters are that they're parents, they live in the Los Angeles area, and they're not in the film business. Now, this is opposite the way most Western European rating systems are done. In that case, they oftentimes do have some parents on the board, which I think there's some validity mm-hmm. to that. But they also have people who are schooled in media and child psychology, because it's difficult to decide what the impact of a film is going to be on a developing child or adolescent. I mean, there's obviously a great deal of research that one would want brought to the subject.
And I think many parents scratch their head or sometimes even complain about the use of language or even the graphic violence that's allowed. But you really focus on the other end, the R, NC-17, what used to be X. Why was it important to focus on that part of the rating system?
Well, I think that the reason I wanted to focus on that is because it seems like the NC-17 rating, the harshest rating, is given primarily to films that have sexual content. And it's much different in Europe. In Europe, there's the concern is much more with violence. In the U.S., it's much more with sex. So I wanted to bring to light this obsession with sex on the ratings board.
And for an NC-17, what does that mean for a filmmaker? I mean, if they get an NC-17, what does that mean for their film as it gets released to the public?
Well, an NC-17 rating means that many theaters won't carry it, some newspapers won't advertise it, there are television restrictions, and then the major video outlets like Blockbuster and Walmart usually won't carry it. So it dramatically impacts a film's aftermarket and bottom line.
You interview the director of Boys Don't Cry, and in fact, many people wouldn't speak to you. Does that tell you just how powerful this board is?
Yes, I was very surprised by that. I initially thought so many filmmakers had been impacted by this rating system that I'd have no problem getting people to talk. In fact, I told my director, let's be very careful about lining up interviews. I don't want to leave a bunch of directors' interviews on the cutting room floor. They'd come to me afterwards and say, hey, Kirby, why did I waste my time? Well, what I learned is that many people who are very supportive of the project didn't want to go on the record because they were afraid that their future films would be more severely rated. Mm-hmm. And some were even afraid of being branded as troublemakers in Hollywood, which, if you're an independent filmmaker, it's tenuous enough existence as it is. So I was really appalled by this paranoia. I mean, this is the way that the MPAA is able to restrain criticism. I mean, if the people who've been impacted by the system are afraid to speak, who is going to speak?
But do you think it's paranoia? Do you think it's real fear?
It is real fear. I mean, I just talked to John Waters the other day again, John Waters is on our film, and he actually says in the film that he's questioning whether he even should be doing this interview with me. Well, 6 months later, I'm talking to him, and he's saying the same thing. He's saying, Kirby, I'm very happy to do interviews for the film, but I'm going to be very careful about what I say about the MPAA rating system, because I've got another film going up before them.
Well, let's talk a bit about Boys Don't Cry, a terrific film, if I might say. And you did talk to the director, and there were some very specific scenes that the board had a problem with. Describe what they were complaining about.
Well, Kimberly Pierce, the director of Boys Don't Cry, the scene that I think they had the most problem with was Chloe Savigny's orgasm, which they thought that her orgasm went on too long. And Kimberly Pierce was very funny, and she said, well, who's ever been hurt by an orgasm that's gone on too long?
Was that, though, their specific criticism that the orgasm went on too long, or she just sort of surmised from their comments?
No, that was their specific criticism in this case, and it's, you know, her position on this is that, or her kind of evaluation of why she got this restrictive rating for that was that she argues that most of the films in Hollywood are written and directed by men, and so mostly what you see is the male experience. Mm-hmm. So the film raters are actually uncomfortable, and they're not used to seeing the female sexual experience, and they're therefore uncomfortable with it. And what people tend to do when they're uncomfortable with things is to try to shut them down or close them off. Unfortunately, what they're doing is they're not closing it off just for themselves. They're closing it off for the entire country, particularly for the entire adult audience.
And we should say, for this scene, the camera really is just resting on Chloe Savigny's face.
Yes.
And she's obviously experiencing the pleasure of orgasm.
She's acting. I don't think she was really having an orgasm.
No, that I understand.
No, I know you know that.
We're talking about a fiction film.
This makes it even more absurd that it's getting an NC-17 rating for that.
Well, and a number of the directors that you interview, though, seem to say that there was something about female sexuality that would end up being, if you want to get not an NC-17 rating, that was what had to be cut. Do you think that's really true when you look at the whole, the sort of totality of you know, what can or can't be shown in a film?
Well, again, yes, I do to some degree. I mean, I think what is uncomfortable that oftentimes the film raters censor. You're dealing with film artists, and it's Mary Harron, another director I interview in my film about American Psycho. That's a film that really is meant to make people uncomfortable. That's a technique that artists use and have always used. Well, again, once people are uncomfortable, they tend to close things off. So what you have here is a ratings board censoring film artists, which, you know, I think is very wrong.
I wonder if there's another way to look at this, and I don't even know how this would work, but somehow to give the NC-17 rating the respect it's due.
No, I think that's it's interesting. I was just in Edinburgh at the Edinburgh Film Festival with this film, and the people from the UK were just appalled that an NC-17 rating would keep people from seeing the film. Here it has a stigma in the US. In the UK, there's the same kind of rating. It's R18. People under 18 are not allowed to see the film. But that's fine. All the adults go see the film. But here there's a stigma. Not only are there restrictions in terms of distribution, but there's an actual stigma associated with that.
Why do you think that is?
Well, initially the rating, before it was NC-17, it was X. And the MPAA did not copyright the X rating. So very quickly, the pornography industry appropriated it, XX, XXX, and the X rating became associated with pornography. When in 1990 that rating was changed to NC-17, all that association with the X went over to the NC-17, and the MPAA did nothing. They did to change that association. It would have taken a certain amount of marketing muscle, which of course the MPAA has, to do that, but they don't, because it actually works to their benefit in many ways.
Well, we'll pick up on that after this short break. That's Kirby Dick, our guest today on Radio Times. We're talking about his new documentary, This Film Is Not Yet Rated. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Getting a slice of the American pie has always been a fight, especially for immigrants. Today, it's largely Latin Americans in the streets. But 80 years ago, it was Eastern Europeans when 16,000 wool workers in Passaic, New Jersey, decided they'd had enough.
Into every room they scattered with cries of strike, strike.
A radio documentary, Passaic on Strike.
Monday night at 10 on WHYY.
This week in This American Life, what it's like for writer David Sedaris, living in France, struggling with the language.
This is my worst nightmare right here. Okay, my lighter has run out of fluid, which would mean that I would have to ask somebody for a match. And so what I would say is, hello, do you have some fire?
Americans in Paris, why the French may be right to hate us.
I will not spend the afternoon asking people if they have fire.
Wednesday night at 10 o'clock on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. What's it like living in New Orleans today? Well, we'll speak to one resident about the one dry room in his house. Also, the mayor of Salt Lake City gets ready for a presidential visit by helping to organize a protest. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. So who rates the movies we watch? There's a new documentary called This Film Is Not Yet Rated, and it looks at how the rating system works in the movies and its impact on American culture. And we're talking with the director of this documentary, Kirby Dick. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. It is interesting, though, to think about this rating system and how, at least in this country, sex is in sort of one category over here and violence in another category over there. And it sounds like in Europe, it's maybe, I don't know if it's exactly reversed, but it's a very different approach to those two parts of films.
Oh, absolutely. In Europe, they're much more concerned with the impact of violence on adolescent and child behavior. Here, it's just the opposite. They're much more concerned with sex rather than violence. Now, I think there's a reason for that, and that is because the studios, the MPAA is the trade organization lobbying arm for the six major studios, and the studios tend to make films with much more violence in. So it's not surprising that those films get the less restrictive ratings. Their competition, which is independent films and foreign films, tend to make films about more mature themes with more adult sexuality, and so those films, coincidentally, I don't think so, get the more restrictive ratings.
So you're saying this really, this system then allows for the Hollywood films to get the kind of distribution then, an audience that an independent film might not get.
Exactly, that the audiences for the independent films become limited by this.
Well, and you know, we have to do this on the radio, but you know, how do they decide then the difference between, let's say, a PG-13 and an R when it comes to something like violence?
Well, this is very interesting because it's so inconsistent. In fact, we interviewed Terry Webb, a researcher associated with UCLA in our film, and she looked at how the MPAA ratings board rates films for violence, and she found out that many PG-rated films have more instances of violence in and extreme violence in than even PG-13 and R-rated films. So there's a real inconsistency here, and that's because there are no written standards.
And you mean that? I mean, there are, as much as you've been able to investigate.
Well, there are a few written standards, but they are so minimal and they're so unprofessionally developed. I mean, there's almost no standards for violence.
There's also an interesting way that the F word can be used, and I guess when it's used, trying to think how I can say this on the radio. Okay, as it's used as a curse word, that doesn't seem to be as problematic as when it's used in a sexual reference.
Well, yes, it's kind of funny in this way. If it's used once as a curse word, a film is rated PG-13. If it's used in a sexual context, it immediately gets an R. Or if it's used twice or more as a curse word, then the film gets an R. Of course, sometimes this rule is bent. If you are a major filmmaker, major studio filmmaker, you can bend that rule. Independents, of course, don't have that option.
And one of the documents that you found in the trash was a listing of how many times the F word appeared in
yes.
a particular film.
It's reassuring to know that 10 people in a dark room in Los Angeles are counting the F words in all the films that we see to protect us, of course.
Now, you actually submitted this film. I mean, this is sort of part of your film, which is you submitted it to the ratings board to see what kind of a rating you would get. Well, now, was this sort of a gimmick of your film, or were you really curious to see what they would do with it?
Well, it was actually more than curiosity. Because there's so much secrecy around the rating system, I needed to submit my film to find out what happened to a film when it went through the ratings process. So I did. But when I was about three-quarters of the way through making the film, I cut the film together and included all the scenes that had sex scenes in my films because when I was interviewing directors, I had them talk about their films and then showed clips from their films that gave those films the NC-17 rating. So I put this all together in a kind of a tight, rough cut and submitted it to the MPAA for a rating, to get a rating. They, of course, this also included the whole investigation where I had outed all the names of the raiders as well. So they were completely surprised this is what's coming in. I mean, you could imagine them sitting there going, okay, what film are we going to rate today? And it comes on. It's about the film rating system. That's about what we do. And they've hired a private investigator to find out who we are. And look,
there you are on the screen,
there,
right?
There I am on the screen, and they found out. Well, they gave the film an NC-17 rating.
And they said it had something to do with the sexual content,
exactly.
Not so much outing them.
No, yeah. I actually, I think there's a certain irony there, but I think the reason it got an NC-17 was consistent with the way they rate other films, and because it had, my film had clips from films that had given those films an NC-17 rating.
Now, you did find out just about all the identities of the people that serve on this ratings board.
Yes.
And they, you know, they do seem to fit this criteria of average Americans.
In that regard, although there was something we found out that the MPAA has claimed for decades that the film raters have children between the ages of 5 and 17, what we found out is that nearly half the raters do not. They have children, but all the children over the age of 17. So this, again, this secretive system, the MPAA has really lied to the public, to parents, for, as I said, decades about this qualification.
How do you get on the board, though?
Well, you know somebody. It's not an open call. It's the way it's done is that if there's a vacancy, the chair of the ratings board asks if the raters know someone, and then that's how the people come in. And there's a reason for that. The chair is the most powerful person on the board, and in fact, one of the things we found that's very interesting, if there's a tie vote, the chair gets to vote again and break the tie. So in other words, the chair votes twice.
And in this case, we're talking about a woman named Joan Graves.
Joan Graves, yes.
Still the head of the board, then.
Still the head of the board, yes. So, and the reason they want people coming in who don't have qualifications, who are friends of friends, is it's much easier to control people if they've come in through a friend connection.
Now, you also appealed this NC-17
yes.
rating, and I found that even, in certain ways, even more fascinating than the initial process to get this rating. And there is an appeals process,
yes.
But it's bizarre and Byzantine, to say the least.
Yes, I was completely shocked. If you are given a rating that you don't like, you have the opportunity of appealing it and going to the appeals board. Well, I assumed because it was called the appeals board, there would be sort of a proper, it would be run in a proper fashion. Not at all. I found out, first of all, that I couldn't attend with the attorney of my choice, even though the appeals board is chaired by an attorney from the MPAA.
But you couldn't bring your own attorney.
I couldn't bring my own attorney in. Secondly, none of the appeals board would identify themselves to me. I mean, I walked in. Some of these people I knew from being in the business. I said, hi, I'm Kirby Dick. I'd like to, what is your name? They wouldn't tell me. These are people who are deciding not only the rating of my film, but it might impact my career.
In fact, they had numbers on
their lapels. They had numbers
on it.
Yes, that identified them. There was, again, no written transcript. I'm not sure why the numbers were there. The numbers are just some sort of something out of The Prisoner, I think. A little touch.
That was the PBS system about this weird world. But what I found even more interesting is that if you appeal your film, you can't say to them, but look, so-and-so's film had this in it. You know, If you allowed this film through, why wouldn't you let my film through? You can't make that
argument.
No,
you cannot refer to other films.
Precedent, right?
You can't use precedent. And if you do refer to other films in making your argument, you are cut off. I mean, you're literally cut off. You're saying you're out of order. So you're in a situation. And what's really kind of appalling about this is when you're in the appeal stage of the ratings process, that's the only argument you can use. I mean, otherwise you're left with saying, please change the rating of my film.
Is that what you said? Or I mean,
oh no, not at all. I was in a much different position than most filmmakers.
You had a film to make here, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly true. I knew that my appeal was not going to be overturned. So I was not obligated to try to – I was not under any kind of pressure to try to change their minds. So I went in there and actually questioned the system. Mm-hmm. And we got into some very interesting debates, which is exactly what I wanted to do. But again, what I was appalled at is people actually took this process seriously. It was a Kafkaesque system that, you know, no professional system should be run this way. Why are these people, executives in the industry – participating in this.
Hmm. And they voted, what, 10-0
to keep
this NC-17 rating?
I guess I
did
really ingratiate myself with them.
Although it's being distributed unrated.
It is being distributed unrated because IFC is not owned by a studio. They're not a studio signatory. So they're not obligated to go out with a film rating. And so they can go out unrated. which has its own restrictions, but they're not as onerous as the restrictions of an NC-17 rating.
Well, and it's interesting to compare the ratings board and then the appeals board, because the appeals board seem to have much stronger, more official connections to the film industry.
Right. This is something that was very surprising, is that everybody on the appeals board is within the industry, and most of them are made up of either studio executives or executives for the major exhibitor chains. And what was so surprising is that people in the industry didn't know this. When it was screened at Sundance, and people were just gasping because people they worked for, their friends, were on this appeals board, and they didn't know it, even though they had known or worked with these people for years.
Should there be a ratings board in Hollywood?
I think it's important that there be some source of information for parents. What I would like to see is a comprehensive but concise listing of the content of a film, whether it's sexual content, nudity, violence, smoking, drug use, thematic content, and so that parents can have this information and that parents can decide for themselves whether they want their children to go see a film rather than 10 anonymous parents living in Los Angeles.
But you're saying much more specific information about what's in a film?
Right. Right now, all that's given is sort of a letter rating and a very short descriptor.
Profanity,
which by the
whatever.
Exactly. Which, by the way, the MPA and Jack Fellini fought for many years even to add that little bit of information. But it's really not enough. I mean, there's, again, looking at especially Western European rating system, that the information is much more comprehensive out there.
And how about at the sort of upper end, at the adult end? I mean, should there be an NC-17? Should there be an R?
I personally don't think there's any real value to age-based restrictions, personally. I don't think society will ever get to that situation. I think what's important is that if there is the NC-17 rating, that it doesn't have any restrictions on its distribution. If a theater doesn't want to play it, that's fine. But it should have the option of being able to play it if it wants to. But I don't think that the MPA is going to put the marketing muscle behind changing the stigma and the image associated with the NC-17.
Let me just backtrack a bit, and then we'll start taking some phone calls here, because some of the directors who submitted their films for a rating that got back an NC-17, I mean, sometimes it was really a matter of just shaving off a little piece of the film.
Exactly.
or covering something up just so that it wouldn't get this NC-17 rating. Did most people do it because then they knew they could get better distribution for their film? Is there that kind of pressure on a director?
Oh, completely. In fact, many people, if they're making films for the specialty divisions of the studios, the independent divisions, are contractually obligated to do that.
Uh-huh.
But yes, I mean, if not, if private investors were financing the film, then the private investigators would insist on getting an R rating. Nobody wants to have no investor wants their back end limited by getting a restrictive rating.
So the director of Boys Don't Cry then just sort of cut some of that scene of Chloe Sevigny?
Exactly.
Just shaved some seconds off.
Exactly. But what the problem here is that it's not only those seconds that are shaved off. I mean, why? And these are works of art. I mean, we wouldn't ask Jackson Pollock to take out a few drips because, well, I don't know if anybody would be... Well, people were offended by those drips at the time. But actually, it's the self-censorship that precedes the rating process, where directors know that they're going to get an NC-17 rating, and so adjust the way films are written and shot. Which is why most American sex scenes tend to look very similar, because all the directors are shooting for this R rating. In Europe, it's much different. If you look at a film by Bernardo Bertolucci, The Dreamers, he's making a film without regards to the American rating system. And it's what you see is a much more inventive cinematic exploration of sexuality.
And that's Kirby Dick, our guest today on Radio Times. We're talking about his new film. It's a documentary called This Film Is Not Yet Rated. And he decided to investigate one of the best-kept secrets in Hollywood, and that's the ratings board of the Motion Picture Association of America, the MPAA. And these are the folks that give films that G rating, PG, PG-13, R, and NC-17. Give us a call here on Radio Times. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Do you think a rating system like this is working? Have you gone to films and scratched your heads about how some of the stuff got through? Or do you find that some films have been sanitized, where they would be much better if they were kept unedited? Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. We've got Mike from Gladwin. Mike, go ahead, your Radio Times.
All right, thanks, guys. Just a quick question. Actually, two quick questions. Do you find that these board members are chosen for life? And the second question is, have you ever known of a board member to be fired for, I guess, speaking out about the system?
Those are very good questions. There are three senior raiders on the board whose terms are indefinite. And then there are six or so junior raiders who are hired for five-year terms, although, again, what we found out is many of those terms were extended. So it's a very flexible system, which actually benefits the studios. What was the second question?
I was actually thinking of my own question. I was going to sneak in there. But you did talk to some former members of the board, two guys, Steve Farber, Jay Landers.
Actually, and this actually applies to the second question. Jay Landers was hired, and he came out of a somewhat different background than most raiders. He was came out of academia, and as soon as he got on the board, he was very surprised to learn at how unprofessional it was. And he says, "Hey guys, I got a great idea. Let's have some written standards." And he began advocating for that. Well, as a result of that, he was forced off the board. Mm-hmm. Not only was he forced off the board, he had signed a confidentiality agreement and was told that if he spoke out about any of his experience, that he could very possibly be sued.
Wow. And sued because his speaking out could hurt the film industry or a particular film or this board itself?
Speaking out because it would be criticism of the system. I mean, this, again, we're dealing with the film ratings, not with national security here. But Jack Valenti has set up a system that is so secretive that no one knows what's going on. And if no one knows what's going on, no one really can criticize it except for just very loosely from the outside.
Now, Dan Glickman, is who used to be, I think, in the Agriculture Department in
Secretary
the Clinton administration, is now the head of this board. Is he carrying on Valenti's philosophy?
Dan Glickman is the president of the MPAA, and so he oversees the board. And he's actually more open-minded, certainly, than Jack Valenti. Jack Valenti is sort of one of America's most notorious lobbyists, I would say. Dan Glickman is more open-minded. The system is set up to benefit the studios, so he's under a great deal of pressure not to change. I'm hopeful that he will change, and I'm hopeful that this film will help pressure the MPA to change their rating system.
Jack Valenti is quoted in this. I think he's talking at a conference somewhere, maybe even testifying before Congress, and saying, essentially, hey, if a film is good, then rating isn't going to help or hurt. It's a neutral thing, and if a film is worthy, people will come and see it.
Well, if a theater isn't showing it, there's no way for them to see it. And if you take a film like A Dirty Shame, which was made by John Waters, which he went out with an NC-17 rating. I think if that film had an R rating, it would have done double the box office. It would have been treated very similar to the way Team America was treated, which is sort of a master American film comedian pushing the boundaries of taste to make some commentary on society. No, because it was an NC-17, I think the box office was cut down 50%. Mm.
Those are both funny films. I mean,
yes.
Does that also complicate the rating system if it's a satire or, tweaking somebody or something?
Yes, I think anything that makes the raiders uncomfortable is puts them in a situation where they're going to tend to give it a more restrictive rating.
We're going to take another short break and get back to our conversation with our guest, Kirby Dick. He's a documentary filmmaker, and his most recent film is called This Film Is Not Yet Rated, produced by the Independent Film Channel. And it takes a look at the ratings board of the Motion Picture Association of America. That's the MPAA. And those are the folks that decide whether a film is rated G or PG, PG-13, R, or NC-17. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Give us a call. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Philadelphia moves forward to the next mayoral election. How will surrounding areas be affected? What issues concern the entire region? How will the future of Philadelphia help determine the future of the entire Delaware Valley? The Next Mayor, a groundbreaking multimedia project to explore the issues leading to the Philadelphia mayoral election. Your issues, your voice. Presented by WHYY, the Daily News, and the Committee of 70, To learn more, visit thenextmayor.com.
On the next Fresh Air, on the anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, we talk with Father Doug Dusan and Sister Kathleen Pittman, who are rebuilding their church in New Orleans. And we talk with Ivor Van Heerden, Deputy Director of the Louisiana State University Hurricane Center. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air. This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
Next time on Day to Day.
You've seen the damage that remains along the Gulf Coast a year after Hurricane Katrina.
But that's just part of the picture. Look below the Gulf's murky waters.
It brought houses with it. It brought structures with it. Boats, cars, whatever it could find. And I'm sure that there's so much stuff underneath here, they'll never find it.
Trying to salvage the underwater world left by Hurricane Katrina next time on Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We are talking about the ratings board of the Motion Picture Association of America. The board has been in existence since the late 1960s. Many filmmakers have complained that the rulings of the ratings board don't make sense. The criteria they use is arbitrary. The identities of the ratings board has been pretty much a well-kept secret in Hollywood until my guest Kirby Dick decided to investigate it, and he did hire a detective agency, and that's the subject of his new documentary called This Film Is Not Yet Rated. His last documentary, Twist of Faith, about clergy sexual abuse, was nominated for an Academy Award, and he's done other documentaries as well. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get back to our callers. We've got Ian from Philadelphia. Ian, go ahead, your Radio Times.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
Question for your guest, Kirby. In years past, I had heard that in the making of Clerks, it was initially submitted to the ratings board. They gave it a very strong rating and asked, due to the foul language, and asked them to edit and submit it. The rumor that I was hoping you could either confirm or deny was that after 3 months, he sent it back unscathed, untouched, unedited, and it got an R rating and then was nationally released.
Well, let me find out if you know that story, Kirby. Ian, thanks for the call.
That's very close to being true. Clerks did get an NC-17 for language. And what Kevin Smith did is he submitted it to the appeals board, and he was able to convince the appeals board to overturn that rating, and it went out with an R. But it's just, to me, again, it's shocking that a film like Clerks would get an NC-17 just for language. And it reminds me of a statement that John Waters makes in the film, is that in the past it seemed like it was difficult to make a films where you showed sex. But now it's getting to the point where it's difficult to even make a film where you talk about sex.
Hmm. Well, you even show a clip from Coming Home, and this was the Jane Fonda, John Voight film. There's a scene where they're making love, and again, the camera's looking on the woman's face as this would be Jane Fonda. As they're having sex, and she's clearly enjoying herself. That seemed to be okay, 25 years ago?
Well, there's a reason for that. 25 years ago, the studios were making films targeted for adult audiences. And again, those themes would be more mature, have more adult sexuality. Mm-hmm. Now the target has moved much more toward adolescence. So that's why you see 25 years ago, a film with that kind of sexuality getting an R rating. But now, since the studios no longer make that, they have no problem giving that kind of film, for example, Boys Don't Cry, an NC-17 rating, while the films that they do make and targeted adolescents are violent films, those films get off much more easily.
Okay, let me get back. Ian, thanks for the call. We've got Amy from Douglasville. Amy, go ahead, your Radio Times.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My husband and I just rented a movie from Netflix on their recommendation from us liking the movie Pirates of the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. And it was rated R. No problem between my husband and I. And when we got it, we put it in. It was clearly a pornography-type film. The only thing I was trying to... We watched some of it, probably most of it, because I was really curious to see what did they cut out that could make it now R, and there really wasn't anything. The only thing they cut out maybe is male genitalia and the vulva area of a woman.
Well, and it shows, I think, how arbitrary the system is, Kirby.
Exactly. I was like, how in the world did this get an R?
Well, go ahead, Kirby.
Well, it shows how inconsistent the system is. And in part, you know, there are no written standards, so they have nothing to refer to. But there's something else that's very interesting, is the studios are able to release a film R-rated, and yet when they go out into sometimes Netflix and the DVD market, they can release the same product in an unrated or NC-17 version. So the studios are able to use this rating system to sell the same product twice, first theatrically and then in the DVD market. So it's a way, actually, of generating back-end profit. Mm.
But it is interesting when you look at cable television that probably is much more explicit than what you would see in general movie theaters.
That is true.
And you add on top of that, you know, access to the internet. I mean, it's sort of interesting world views that are out there.
Right. I mean, this isn't really an antiquated system. I mean, even in 1968, it had shades of the old production code to begin with. But again, my feeling is if the, and this kind of addresses the previous caller's concern, is if there was information about what was in a film, mm-hmm. then adults could decide for themselves whether they wanted to see that film. I think it's up to an adult, and I think it's up to a ratings process, particularly run by the industry, to take the responsibility to let adults and parents know what is in a film.
Is there any evidence? I mean, your film has been at some of the film festivals, but is there any evidence that the ratings board or the MPAA is beginning to sort of rethink its system? And I ask that only because there's a Christian film apparently got a PG-13 rating, and some people in Congress, which could be a dangerous thing, got up in arms about this, thinking that it should be more like a G or PG rating.
Right. And, you know, who knows? I mean, this is the problem. I mean, this is such a secretive system that if a filmmaker or politicians, for that matter, suspect that a film might be rated more restrictively because of its religious content, well, there's no way to know. Now, I personally don't think that's the case, mm-hmm. but who knows? And it's really, if it was a transparent system, these issues would never come up. And if they were, then let's have a debate in the public.
Fair enough.
Mean, obviously, I don't think a film should be rated more restrictively for religious content at all. No, I mean, we have freedom of religion in this country, and it should be reflected in the ratings process.
Let me get back to our callers. We got Sophie from Skipack. Sophie, go ahead. Your Radio Times.
Yes, I just have a comment. As a parent and as an individual, I find it very disturbing that we cannot get more information in the mainstream about a movie's content before it comes out. What we use in our family is screenit.com, and that can give you extremely detailed information about a movie after it's come out, but it's not well known, and I find that the ratings from the MPAA are very incomplete and don't give a parent very much to go on before deciding whether or not a movie is appropriate for a child or even for ourselves, and that's with my comment.
Well, and it's what you've really been saying all along, Kirby Dick, which is that parents don't have enough information.
I think screenit.com is a very good reference point. There's a model out here for the MPAA to use, and they're deliberately choosing not to use it. Mm-hmm. It's not rocket science here. I mean, somebody just needs to sit down and list what's in there so that parents can decide.
You either charged or contemplating charging the MMPA ratings board with piracy because they made some, this just gets curiouser and curiouser, but they made a copy of your film.
They did. Well, a few days before I was going to submit my film to get a rating, I thought, the MPAA is going to want to keep a copy of this film. So I called them up and I said, do you make copies of the film? And they said, oh, no, we never do that. In fact, only the raters see the film, not even the staff. I said, great. They sent me an email corroborating that. Well, a few weeks later, after I'd submitted my film, I learned that Dan Glickman, the head of the MPAA, who works in Washington, had seen the film. Now, the ratings board is in Los Angeles, so I thought, that's curious. And I called up Joan Graves, the head of the ratings board, and asked her, have you made a copy of my film? And her response was, not to my knowledge. Well, I think they knew I was onto them. So about 5 days later, an attorney for the MPAA called me up and said, Kirby, I have to tell you, we have made a copy of your film, but you don't have to worry because it's safe in my vault. Well, you can't.
Did
you
that
can
allay
imagine
your
how
fears?
I was so reassured. But what's interesting here is that the MPAA defines piracy as any single unauthorized duplication of a copyrighted work. So by their own definition, the great champions of quote unquote anti-piracy have pirated my work. Now, what's even more interesting is my attorney sent them a letter asking for where it was copied, who authorized it, how many copies there were, and of course sending the tape back. No response. I mean, they just are too powerful to deal with, you know, which is the way they've treated the American public and American parents. They're so powerful that in spite of all this criticism, much of which we're hearing upon, you know, in these call-ins, they're not going to change their system because it works for them.
But are you going to sue them?
You know, if I need several hundred thousand dollars, and the end result would be they would settle and give me my tape back. Mm-hmm.
But the point you're trying to make is that they are really on a crusade against piracy. I mean, this is, and they have all sorts of penalties for people that pirate films. So you're just trying to show the hypocrisy.
Well, there's a double standard. And also, I think this their crusade is really misguided in many, many ways. In fact, it's become so extreme that it's limiting the development of new technologies and new art forms. Again, because they have the power, they want to hold on to it. I mean, this technology is the file sharing is being developed. They could, like iTunes, be a part of it and make money off it, but instead they're trying to lock everything down.
Let's get back to our callers. We've got Kim from Fargo, North Dakota. Hi, Kim. Go ahead. Your Radio Times.
Yes. I guess I'm going to ask an obvious question, or at least it seems that your comments are leading that way. Has any thought been given to setting up a rival board with credibility that could open the doors on this thing, shed some light in it?
Interesting thought.
Yes, it is. It is. It would take a great deal of work. Obviously, the MPAA, which represents these studios that control 95% of the film business, have the most money and marketing muscle to present a rating system to this country. One of the ideas I had, though, was to actually set up an alternative appeals board, which might be easier to set up and could be run within the industry, that would actually, if somebody took issue with the way a film was rated, particularly an independent filmmaker, they could first go to this appeals board, which would give it a great deal of publicity and get a decision from them. And that might pressure the existing appeals board to act in a more fair way.
But being that people were afraid to talk to you, do you think there's any impetus to have a parallel board like that?
Well, I think in some ways it inoculates them, because if they come out the public and they start getting covered by the press, then people are going to watch very closely how mm-hmm. What's going to happen with their future films. In fact, going back to Kevin Smith, when I interviewed him, I asked him about Clerks 2, and this was before it came out, and he said, I know this film's going to get an NC-17 rating. Well, it came out about a month and a half before my film was opening on September 15th, and it turned out it got an R rating. And I think in part because the MPAA just didn't want to provoke a battle. He has such a following. If it got an NC-17 rating, it would get the same kind of publicity, only more, that the Clerks did, and that all that publicity would spill over onto my film. So they're marketing specialists over there.
Indeed they are. Kim, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let me get Ray from West Philadelphia to join us. Hi, Ray. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. My question has to do more with this idea of self-censorship. I was shocked to find, when I rented on pay-per-view on cable, with no notification about changes, that the scene where the two guys kiss, which is very important to the movie, was cut out. And I just wondered if that was the same kind of idea of self-censorship that you're seeing in the industry.
And Ray, what movie are we talking about here?
It's called Y Tu Mama Tambien.
Oh, Y Tu Mama.
Oh, right. That initially got an NC-17. That went out with an NC-17 rating, I think, did it? Or no, it went out unrated, I believe. I'm not actually sure.
Yeah, I'm not either.
But you bring up a very interesting
cable. I would get what I paid for.
Right. Well, I'm shocked to see that as well. Unless it was, but the problem is that filmmakers don't, especially independent filmmakers, don't have the money to make two versions. So once they make a version that goes out theatrically, they really don't have the money to recut that film for DVD or cable. But you bring up another point, which I think is very interesting, is that films with gay sex are rated much more restrictively than films with straight sex. And in fact, I think the rating is oftentimes a full rating more restrictive. And there's a homophobic bias that is built into the rating system.
So to men kissing, to women kissing, that sort of criteria then could throw it into an NC-17 rating?
I don't think two men or two women kissing could throw it into an NC-17, but it could throw it into an R from a PG-13.
Whereas if it were heterosexuals doing that,
it would just stay as a PG-13. And it's interesting because this has benefits for the MPAA politically, because the ratings are only a small part of what they do. Their major presence is in Washington, lobbying for the passage of laws, particularly these what I consider very onerous intellectual property laws that have been passed very recently. And since Congress is right now controlled by the Republicans, the MPAA, by appearing to rate restrictively films with gay sexuality, that plays very well to the Republicans, and the MPAA has been very successful working with them to get their laws passed. Mm. So I think it's a very cynical use of the rating system for their own political and financial ends.
Ray, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let's get Oscar from Westchester to join us. Oscar, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, yes. I had a question regarding the film Kill Bill, about all the violence in that movie. And in the end of the film, part of it actually becomes black and white during a fight scene. And I had heard that because of the bloodletting, Quentin Tarantino had purposely made it black and white in order to avoid an NC-17 rating, and I was wondering if there's any truth to that.
Do you know Kirby Dick?
I believe that's true. I can't verify it. I mean, I can't recall right now. Obviously, you know, it's interesting because in Taxi Driver, I just spoke to the DP of that, Michael Chapman, recently, and that film was the scene initially was very kind of a lurid red, and they toned it down. They desaturated it a bit. And that's how they were able to get an R rating with that film. So I think you're correct. Quentin Tarantino, though, has a real reputation of being able to get Rs. People wonder how he does it. I'm not suggesting he pays people off. He's just been very successful at it.
Oscar, thanks for calling into Radio Times. But it seems that, I mean, you could never have a perfect system because so much of what we're talking about is contextual. You know, you could say there's this, that, and the other, but without understanding the context in which it happens in a film, you're just sort of left with a laundry list of actions or images.
Well, that's true, but that's exactly why you need professionals involved in the process, because if a professionally developed system would address this issue of context. Mm-hmm. I mean, some films are just purely exploitative, and perhaps those should get more restrictive ratings, and some films might be an examination of violence, and you certainly want to be very careful about keeping that from the public. But the other thing I think that's very important is that, in terms of professionalizing it, is that there should be training for the raters. Right now, there's no training at all. They're just hired the next day. They're put into the rating system. And so it's a system that's been deliberately kept unprofessionalized.
On that note, Kirby Dick, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And his new film is called This Film Is Not Yet Rated, and it's due out in theaters on September 15th. I'm Marty Moscoane. You're listening to WHYY-FM Philadelphia, serving Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, and worldwide at WHYY.org. Drop us an email. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times.